Welcome, friends, to the Home Girls Podcast. This is a place to be if you have questions about buying and selling in today's real estate market. My name is Beth Hobart. I'm a top-selling, award-winning Central Florida realtor, and I'm here with my incredible co-host, Vicki Molitaire.
Hi, friends.
A top-producing, highly recognized mortgage expert. Together, we have over 50 years of combined experience helping clients achieve their goals of home ownership in any market. Our mission, to help you find your way home. So let's get started.
Welcome, friends. Hi, Beth.
We have a special guest today, one of my favorite home inspectors, Paul McGrone with Home Inspections by PJM. Paul, how long do you think we've been working together?
I think that I first met you in 2006, maybe 2007.
Oh my
God. It's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a very long run. And you also have a book out. So I wanted to talk about that real quick. So it's called The Business of Home Inspection. So tell us what made you decide to write a book?
Well, you just said that we've been working together for a long time. And during that interval of time, there's been so much change in home inspection and how it's conducted and who's reviewing it and who's asking for what and all this. So over all that period of time, I started to discover that the new guys getting into the business hadn't learned any of that nuance. So they get into the business, they get certified, and they're thrown out there and start inspecting. But the communication value isn't there yet. They don't understand how to explain certain defects as it pertains to the actual house, industry standards, but then also to kind of veer over to the inspection side where insurance is concerned and how they view things so much differently than the industry does. And so if you're not communicating effectively with the buyers and the real estate agents and everyone involved when necessary, someone's dropping the ball somewhere and it can cost time and money. And sometimes even it could cause someone possibly to lose a house they really want. So the communication between the home inspector, the realtor, the buyer, and everyone involved, I think, is the most essential part of this business. So that's what the inspiration was.
That's been great.
Yeah.
No, I think that's so awesome because one of the things I was telling Vicki before we got on the podcast, I was telling her that what I really like about you is that you're not an alarmist. So even if there is something that, you know, is a defect that might be a bigger defect, you know, that maybe is going to be, you know, a little bit worrisome for a buyer, you have a way of explaining things where people understand like everything is figure outable, you know, there's always a solution. I think it's a really great trait that you have, you know, the way that you handle yourself with buyers where you don't scare everybody, you don't alarm everybody. You just say, here are the facts, here are the problems, and here's how you fix it.
I think that's probably the most important thing of our business. If inspectors are afraid of a realtor that's hands-on, they shouldn't be, because like I had said to you before, Beth, you know, you have a way of making the people around you better, and how you did that with us. Mm-hmm. With me specifically, is I always feel like, and this is meant to be kind of funny, but at the same time, it's meant to prove to you that it's worth to like lower your guard and listen to what other people have to say and prove yourself this way. I always feel like I'm getting sworn in a courtroom. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you? Because there's Beth with her notepad, and she is ready, and she has questions, and they're always good questions, but that's what makes you better. So if you're not fully explaining things, you know, as I think it should be, then you're right. Then people can get alarmed very easily.
Yeah. And I think sometimes people, they feel like they're nervous asking questions, or maybe they feel dumb asking a question. I always tell people, I'm like, there are no dumb questions. You've never done this before, you know, so ask anything. You're always very nice with how you know, your approach, and you never make anybody feel dumb. And, you know, which is nice because, you know, you don't want somebody that's either an alarmist or kind of a know-it-all that, you know, makes you feel uncomfortable. So you're very disarming, which is very helpful.
Well, thank you for that. Don't you think that it's like, I think empathy plays a huge part in what you do as a realtor? Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, it really does play a part in what someone does as an inspector, because if I have a better feel for who I am speaking with, even if the results are the same, no matter what the house is, you find the same problems. You basically have to tailor your communication with the individual person you're working with, because they may be new at this, or they may have bought mm-hmm. five houses in the past and it's not new to them. So you have a different way of approaching each different person. So empathy from the standpoint of understanding who they are and where they're coming from.
Right. I think that's
I love that. Actually. I don't know you personally. Yeah. I just wanted to say, I love that because no matter, like you said, whether it's your first house you're buying or your first house you're selling, because home inspection impacts both sides, right? Everything you have discovered in this home inspection eventually is going to, you know, it goes to the buyer first. And then if they want something fixed, you know, best going to renegotiate with the seller. But that communication, right. You know, it's delicate, right? Because you've got a seller that has pride of ownership and a house they lived in. And then you've got a buyer who just wants, you know, doesn't want to have to spend any money immediately because they're spending so much just to get in there. So I really love hearing, you know, how important the communication is and to you, not just, you know, the quality of the work.
Well, we have some questions for you, Paul, that we'd like to ask. So, so I'm going to kick it off. I'm a first time home buyer. What do I need to know as I go into my first home inspection?
Well, I think the very first thing most people always forget about is to pick a home inspector, right? So the first thing I would say is, like, if you are working with a real professional person on the real estate side, that they usually will provide for you several options, all of which are probably going to be good options because they are in the business. And if they're like you, they're not going to hook you up with someone who's less than good at what they do, right?
Right.
So I would say for a home buyer, you know, do the research on the group that you're presented with by the real estate agent, and even look beyond that and interview some people, you know, because I think that that's important to feel comfortable with the person doing the job. Mm-hmm. Right. Then as you get into the home inspection process, I think a lot of people sometimes overlook the value of being present. It doesn't mean you have to be present from start to finish, but I do think at some point, prepare to be present and bring questions.
Like, right.
It's like the doctor's office. Like they say to you, you know, you should ask questions to your doctor. Don't not ask questions. Right.
Now, right.
Please
write them down in advance so you don't forget them all. Right.
Exactly.
Write them down so you don't forget them. But just like that doctor, the last thing you want to do is leave that inspection not having as many of those questions, if not all of them, at least asked to the person doing the work. You know what I mean? But that's the best way to get started. And then while you're there, if you come there, you know, at the end or like an hour before the end, you know, let the person doing the inspecting part of it, it's probably a good idea to let them do their thing. But you should be walking around and looking around and see if you see anything you have a question about.
So you mentioned something interesting. So so we do always tell our buyers, come for the, you know, you don't have to be there the whole time unless you want to be, of course, like it's up to you. You stay as long as you want, whatever you feel comfortable with. Last hour is the most important. That way you can be in the house again. And then we do the final walk with you and you go over all the defects that you find. But you mentioned something about, you know, letting you finish what you're doing. If I'm a new first time home buyer, should I follow you around the house as you're inspecting?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. For me, it's almost always yes, because I don't have a problem either way. The only time it can get cumbersome is if it's a little overwhelming. Like I remember like this one gentleman, and this was just like 2 months ago. And I was at this huge house. It had three buildings on the property. It was down in Kissimmee. Anyway, long story short, this guy hired me because he liked the way I did my reports and he had worked with us before. And we did a smaller house before, which was no problem because I was there for 3 hours. He followed me everywhere. No big deal. But when you've got three buildings and a huge property, and you've got a guy following you, it's a work day. It was an hour inspection. But on larger houses like that, sometimes it's best to give the guy some space that's doing it. Yeah. More often than not, most people don't want to follow you around. I do get those once in a while that do it. And I enjoy it because I have a teaching kind of spirit. So it doesn't matter to me. I'll talk and listen and just try to make sure I don't miss anything by getting distracted, you know. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people kind of give up, like especially in July and August. You know, you look back a half hour later, they're gone. They're back in the house in the AC.
So I know I would be.
I think if you're a first-time home buyer, I think it's not a bad idea if you want to learn to follow the person around. I think that's good advice.
Paul, how long does the average home inspection take for a single-family home?
It's going to take, it shouldn't ever take less than a couple hours, no matter who does it. More often than not, it's between 2 hours and three. I think that 2,500 square foot or less, typically that's about the window that you'd look at.
Do you feel like if I was buying a new construction property, do you recommend doing a home inspection on new construction?
I would have recommended that a whole lot less 10 or 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. But today, the trades are watered down and a lot of things just get overlooked. The place I was this morning was, I was in Mineola, and I went on a second story roof and it looked like the roof had been repaired in three different places. This is a new house.
Oh, gosh.
So the thing about that is, yeah, they had roofing tar in two places about 6 inches apart at three different locations. So there were technically six what looked like repairs close to the soffit area, above the drip edge, maybe 4 or 5 inches in. So when I got up there, you know, the builders don't like us going on the roof, but you know, if you're communicating with them and they know you, they usually will drive away and let you go up there. You know, right. Sometimes they're not thrilled with that. But the way I see it is like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. And if I can't do it right, I'm going to put in my report why I couldn't do it right. So in this one, I was fortunate. I was able to go up there. And now here's the thing. It's a new roof. You know, it's got a manufacturer's warranty. Do you think that those three areas where there were repairs might void that warranty? That's my question.
Right.
That's new construction. That wouldn't have happened 10, 15 years ago, but it happens often enough here. We were at a new construction home in Lake Nona, also two-story with conservation behind it. We went up to the second story, closed permit, by the way. Permit was closed on the roof. Went up to the second story, and they did not shingle the ridge cap for the second story at a whole side. So when you look at that, you say to yourself, well, who's looking at this? Well, the superintendent can't go up there because of liability. Only the roofer can. Once they're done, they're done. That guy must have got a phone call from his wife. Can you come home? And he forgot all about the rest of the roof. I don't know. But I do know these things happen too much.
Yeah.
So, new construction, definitely.
Yeah. And you know me, I always recommend new construction. If you can do a pre-drywall inspection, you know, before they put the drywall in, so you can look at the plumbing and the electrical and all those things. I know a lot of builders aren't really allowing that now, and they're only allowing the final inspection right before closing. But I'm with you, Paul. I always recommend it on new construction.
The advice that I would give to like a person buying new construction is you're going to do a pre-drywall with the superintendent to make sure that what's on your blueprints is actually in the house. So if you ordered some special stuff, chandelier, whatever, bracing for that chandelier, they're going to be looking for that.
Mm-hmm. You know, Paul, what's funny, a lot of my clients, you know, because I do the mortgages. So a lot of my clients will say, what's the difference between a home inspection and an appraisal? Because, you know, a lot of them are first timers. And I'll say, well, the home inspection is so that you can just, you know, the condition of the property, if it's in need of repair, and the remaining economic life of the major systems. And the appraisal is a completely different thing, where we determine the house is worth what you agreed to pay for it. And the appraiser is not a home inspector. The only, you know, they're not going to report, you know, any deficiencies typically, unless it's something, you know, you can see with the naked eye. There's an active leak in the ceiling. They've got to say something about that. But the appraiser is not a home inspector, and the home inspector is not an appraiser. So.
Yeah, that's 100% true. Unless you're in England, I think they call them appraisers in England, actually.
So for buyers that are brand new and that are getting a home inspection, help Beth and I define the difference between, you know, what you see and how that differs from insurance requirements, what your job is in providing that report when you're done with your inspection versus what the insurance company's restrictions might be. How do you guys address that?
Well, again, I think you have to go back to how you report on it. And everything is a learning curve as far as time goes by. So just an example, in the year 2000, you know, with main electrical panels, very often, in fact, more often than not, the electricians were installing a surge suppressor, which is a little device that goes on the bottom of the electrical panel. And what they were doing is they were basically hooking those wires to the surge suppressor to the bottom main lugs of the electrical panel, along with the main service legs, right? that was an acceptable practice. It no longer is an acceptable practice, but it was when that house was built. That was an approved installation, and it was probably even a manufacturer's specification where it was allowed to be installed that way. But this insurance company made our buyer hire an electrician to remove it because they called it a double tap. So I'm explaining to you in some sort of verbiage in a report that this was an approved practice when the home was constructed. It is not an approved practice now, that we would recommend they consider consulting with an electrician on upgrading the installation to current standards, and then explain because in the eyes of an insurance carrier, it may be called out as a substandard installation. You know,
Beth, I'm sure you've got some stories because you've got a home inspector that is just making sure the home is safe and commenting on condition. And then our insurance restrictions have gotten so tight that, you know, they don't care about code. They don't care. They just care about not having to pay on claims. So they're setting the bar a little higher. And then you've got a buyer that has to figure out, okay, I'm okay with the condition of the house, but can I get insurance?
Right. So sometimes, like as Paul was saying, like sometimes you need a letter from the inspector or from the electrician saying it's actually fine. Or sometimes the insurance companies are like, no, you need to still replace that. Like they're not going to listen to the licensed vendor for some reason, you know? So it's a balancing act with some of these insurance companies. And, you know, that's why you have to have a good team of people around you. So that way you can get the experts involved to maybe, you know, resolve some of these issues that come up.
Yeah. So if I was buying something this year, the first step would be to get my contract accepted. Then I'm going to hire a great home inspector who's going to give me a report and get on the condition of the property and just point out any obvious problems so I can decide if I want to go back to the seller and renegotiate. That's my first step. But then what do I give the insurance company to get a quote?
Well, from the inspector point of view, you want to keep the home inspection report out of the hands of everyone except you and your realtor, because it is really for the buyer. Then the insurance company has specific forms that we are now using the citizens form religiously because it's the only one or the one that gets most accepted, right? So there's specific forms, a 4-point report form, a wind mitigation report form, a roof certification report form. These are things that you would want to send to the insurance company. Once we understand what's in the house, then we understand what goes on the insurance reports. It's at that point in time where I personally feel like I have to let Beth know, I think this is going to be an issue on your insurance stuff.
Yeah, it just depends on what it is, right? Because if there's a lot of things that come up that will affect the 4-point, I know it's going to get kicked back from insurance, but sometimes you have to submit it to see what is going to get kicked back. So that way you can work it out with the seller, because if the buyer still wants the home and it's not falling down and it's not in bad shape, there are just things that have come up with the roof and the plumbing or the electrical or, you know, or the HVAC or the water heater, you know, like a lot of times we can work through these things. And the truth is that those same items are going to affect any buyer in the market. So that seller is going to deal with it, whether they're working with us or another buyer, and they should know what the, you know, what the defects are so we can reach an agreement. So I do submit the 4-point. I get more answers from the insurance company, and then we work through it with the other party to see if we can, you know, find a solution and move forward. And sometimes we can and sometimes we can't, but it's always worth a discussion to see if we can get there.
I don't think many people realize this, but if we go out and do a standalone insurance inspection report, like let's just say a 4-point report, it is a minimal thing that we do just to basically fill out that form. We snap some pictures. We have the age of the AC. We have the type of plumbing. We have the roof and the age, and we're checking the electrical, and that's pretty much it.
So tell us a story about your worst home inspection that you've ever been through.
The number one worst one I ever been through was a house, and I think it was in St. Cloud. It was an older home, and I think it was probably built like maybe 1940. It had a crawl space, but it was added onto. So where the access to the crawl space was behind the house, in the newer section. So I had crawled through there, and it was a little difficult because some of the times the older homes, the space gets smaller. So I had crawled around the corner and not like running into any wildlife or anything like that. But there was a really bad odor, like a sewage odor.
Uh-oh.
And I had already been in here now for like, you know, a good 15 feet. Right. So now I'm crawling through this one section and it's sewage. It's raw sewage that is laying on the dirt underneath the crawl space because the cast iron pipes had failed. And the homeowners didn't know they failed because they're not going under there and everything's still draining. But where it's draining to is the issue. But that was the worst.
Oh, my goodness.
I remember getting out of there just like there's no worse feeling in the world than to think you've been playing in sewage. You know,
have you ever gotten stuck in a crawl space?
No, but I have almost gotten stuck in an attic.
How'd you get stuck in the attic?
Well, it was interesting because most of these homes that are built in the 90s have like these mazes for attics, right? And some of them even today, but this particular one had a little a hipped off section, and then they had where the reciprocating saw, they cut an opening so that someone can crawl through. So I was that someone and I fit going through. But what a lot of times you forget about is when you have to come back out, sometimes you have to go backwards to come back out. Right.
Oh,
and it becomes very difficult if you're trying to get down low enough to crawl and snake yourself under. So I had tried to get out going forward and it didn't work. I had tried to get out coming backward, but I couldn't feel where my feet were touching and I didn't want to put my foot through the ceiling. So I spent about 5 to 7 minutes trying to figure this out. The problem is sometimes those judgment calls, you have to remember two things. One, if you had a big breakfast or not. And two, like your age plays a part in it. You know, 20 years ago, I could crawl through anything. Now I'm a lot slower crawling through everything.
You are very agile. I would be, if I would have gotten stuck in that attic, I would have just started screaming for help. Like, what do you do? Because I'd be all freaked out, stuck. I always think that whenever I see you going down into the crawl space, I'm like, God bless, because I don't know if I ran into any type of animal or bug, I would just.
She's not coming to get you if you run into an animal or bug. Yeah, she'll be running from the building.
I don't know. I'd be calling for 911.
I did one in Winter Park right around 40 years old. They say that your eyesight changes and mine did. Right. Did it? It seemed like it was like clockwork. Right. So when the house in Winter Park, we had a crawl space and I went underneath, but it was really wet under there and it wasn't sewage. It was just a wet crawl space and I didn't have glasses yet. And there were what I thought were lizards running around and I thought they were lizards. So I'm crawling through and I'm like, oh, look at how many lizards are down here. Right. So when I got out, my termite guy's like, did you see those roaches? They were actually roaches. And I was like, okay, time for glasses.
Paul. Mm.
Yeah.
I don't know about that whole thing.
Yikes. On that note, let's take a sec for our sponsor to say a word or two. And then maybe when we come back, we can wrap up with Paul giving our homeowners some advice on how to maintain their houses.
This episode is sponsored by Legacy Life Project, creating personal biographies of elderly relatives in high-definition video so that future generations will be able to see and hear them tell their life stories in their own words. Create a lasting legacy for your family before it's too late. Visit LegacyLifeProject.com for details and to schedule a personal biography video interview.
And we're back on the Home Girls podcast. We're speaking today with Paul McGrone with Home Inspections by PJM. And we've had a lot of great questions answered by Paul today. And we have one final question for you, Paul. What are some suggestions that you have for maintaining a home once you move in?
Well, I think the most important thing is to recognize we live in a really wet climate, right? So from a home maintenance standpoint, I think controlling your water drainage on your property, both from the roof and around the perimeter of the building, is probably the most important thing you can do. Ask anyone who doesn't do that over time what happens around your house. You'll see erosion, foundation cracks, things of that nature. We don't want that to happen. We'd like to try and get better drainage control. Most of these homes in Florida, a lot of them don't gutter the roof. And when you don't do that, waterfalls down around the perimeter and ultimately can get in through the foundation, believe it or not, especially during some of the torrential weather we have. So drainage, I would say, is number one. Number two, in conjunction with that, would be if you have a stucco home, whether it's a concrete home or a wood frame home, please remember that these cracks are openings in the wall. So if you have a lot of wind-driven rain like we have here, you're going to get water into your building. It's an inevitability. So sealing them is important.
Yeah, sometimes with that stucco, it can be something just as easy as painting, right? Just keeping your house sealed and painted in Florida because of the hurricanes. I have one last question I just thought of that I think our listeners might be thinking about too, because we live in Florida. What about termite inspections?
I think it's a good idea to have a termite inspection done annually, have someone put a bond on the house, work with a reputable company so that they can check yearly, especially if like you're in an area where termite activity with older homes is prevalent, you know, like downtown Orlando, parts of St. Cloud, College Park. When you have a home that has termite damage and you don't have a termite guarantee or a bond, when the inspection takes place, the inspectors, including the termite inspectors, can't tell you when that damage happened. So if you have a bond and it's under the care of a professional and it's transferable to the new buyer within like 30 or 60 days, this is fantastic because it might be older damage. We know it's under the care of a professional, and now it becomes a moot point. But if you don't do that, it becomes a question mark, and a huge question mark, because now you start worrying about all these things that pop into your head with termites. Are they behind the walls? Is the house going to fall down? All these things that one mistake of not having the preventive care in place acts like a catalyst to what's to come. That fear factor.
Right.
If it's been cared for, they've had a bond for 8, 10 years, 5 years, 6 years, there's a certain level of comfort that these folks have maintained and cared for the home. And then it becomes not so much of an issue.
Great advice. Lots of great advice in this episode for sure. And so, Paul, if I wanted to buy your book, let us know where we can find it. Where can we find your book, The Business of Home Inspection?
It's available on Inspector Outlet. That's the InterNACHI website for inspection tools, marketing materials, and all these things. And it's really for home inspectors.
That's wonderful. And we'll include that link in the show notes for this episode.
Oh, thank you very much for that.
Thanks, Paul, for joining us. Well, that's all for today. Thanks for listening. Thank you for your downloads and for following us. Thank you for your questions, and please keep them coming. We drop a new episode every Tuesday, and we can't wait to have you back next week. Have a great day. Thanks, friends.
Thanks, Paul.